This is Yaron Brook, guest speaking on Dr. Leonard Peikoff's podcast. I'm here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. Your real-life questions specifically to current events, including politics, economics, and foreign policy. My answers are posted every other week on Mondays. Leonard will continue to answer questions, but now only on alternate Mondays. You can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes at www.peikoff.com. If you have a question to ask me, simply go to peikoff.com/questions. So what do I think is the reason the U.S. government keeps marijuana illegal and not alcohol? I think the main reason is almost everybody has experience with alcohol, including our politicians, but including all the voters. And therefore, everybody, since we have experience with alcohol and we like it, we all want to consume it. And therefore, we won't vote in politicians that want to ban alcohol. I think marijuana is, we have less experience with it. Certainly, our politicians have less experience with it. I think as people's experience with marijuana increases, we're seeing it become legal more and more. So I think you can easily mythologize the risks to people of marijuana. And I don't want to get into the debate of whether marijuana is bad for you or not. Alcohol, too much alcohol is bad for you. I'm sure too much marijuana is bad for you. But I think the only difference really historically has been, well, is another reason. Now that I think of it, there's been a prohibition on alcohol and it resulted in incredible violence and they stopped doing that. And there's a prohibition on marijuana and that's disappearing now today. But in some senses, alcohol is much worse than marijuana because it's an upper and it leads people to, you know, you get a lot of violent crimes under the influence of alcohol. You get almost no violent crimes under the influence of marijuana. So it makes sense to legalize marijuana. I don't know that it makes sense to smoke it, but it makes sense to legalize it. And I think the only reason it hasn't been done is people's experience of it and the social acceptance of alcohol versus marijuana, which has always been seen as this fringe drug. What are my thoughts on NATO bombing in Serbia in 1999? Was this an appropriate action? No, it wasn't. Not because I have any sympathy for Milosevic or the Serbians. I don't. The reason is the fact that there was no American interest at stake. There was no American lives and there was no real American property threatened. I think the only reason to use military force is to defend American lives and property. And there was no American lives and property at stake in Kosovo, and therefore America should not have spent money and risked the lives of its soldiers in an attempt to depose Milosevic. Okay, this is a question from an objectivist who is an MBA student, and he says, SOX and Dodd-Frank acts are set to protect individual rights, but aren't they just more regulations? Yeah, absolutely. These are horrible, horrible, horrible violations of individual rights. Sarbanes-Oxley, which is what SOX is an awful violation of the freedom of businesses to engage in any accounting rules that they and their shareholders and the and maybe the stock market exchanges deem as appropriate. There's absolutely no reason the government should get involved in accounting standards. It's a violation of shareholders and managers' rights, and therefore a huge violation of rights. And Dodd-Frank is just a disaster of a bill. It loads up on top of massive amounts of rights violating regulations that are imposed by force on the banks, on the banking system, and it loads them up with a whole new set of constraints and regulations and controls, and they're told how to do their business, when to do it. The whole regulatory regime around accounting and around banking and around what Washington, around business, is a violation of individual rights. And the politicians and the laws that have been passed should all be condemned. If somebody wants advice on what this, the first thing they should do as president, it's get rid of SOX, get rid of Dodd-Frank, and take the last 10 regulatory bills that were passed and eliminate them in the first 3 months. And then every next 3 months, eliminate another 10 regulatory bills. And when you get back to eliminating the regulation over financial institutions in the 1930s, then we will approach real capitalism. And then, of course, you have to do other stuff like get rid of the Federal Reserve and so on. But most of the regulations that violate rights were passed post-1933. If you were Prime Minister of Japan, what economic policies would you put in place to help the Japanese economy break out of double-decade stagnation? I mean, this is very similar to what I would do if I was advising the Israelis about what to do about rising cost of living. Deregulate, deregulate, deregulate. Cut taxes, cut taxes, cut taxes. eliminate government spending, in that order. Japan is an overregulated, overtaxed economy. Stop stimulating it. Stimulus is just taking money out of the pocket of productive people in business and in life and handing it over to non-productive bureaucrats. So the solution to Japan is massive deregulation and massive tax cuts, not tax increases, and more massive, even greater reduction in government spending, which means laying off probably hundreds of thousands of civil servants in Japan, and it means eliminating whole departments in the government, and it means stop government spending, stop it as much as you can. And as a consequence, you can cut taxes dramatically. And now you have to cut spending more than you cut taxes because Japan is the most indebted government in the world. And so you have to start paying back that debt. And that's going to require you to cut spending dramatically. But look, you can ask me about every country in the world, and I'll give you the same answer. What is the solution to country X economic problems? Too much regulation, too much government spending, and too high taxes. Fill in the blank of whatever country you want. I shouldn't say that. Because some countries, like let's say in Asia and Africa, what you need as a prerequisite, the first thing you need is the rule of law and the protection of property rights. So if a country's getting started, what you need is protection of property rights and the rule of law. Japan has, for the most part, the rule of law, and they have definitions of property rights. Now they have to respect property rights by cutting government spending. So in a developing country, the first thing you need to do is set up an independent judiciary with legal powers, rule of law, protection of property rights, and then you have to create a government structure that protects those property rights. Okay, do you consider Saudi Arabia an enemy of the United States? Yes, I do, in a very fundamental sense. The Saudis are actively involved in preaching, exporting, protestizing, you know, an ideology that is in every way the enemy of the U.S. and preaches ultimately the destruction of the United States and destruction of the West, and ultimately preaches a caliphate. I mean, nominally, Saudi Arabia claims to be the enemy of ISIS, but they created ISIS. This is a Wahhabi spinoff. This is just a spinoff from the dominant ideology of the country of Saudi Arabia, of the priests and the mullahs in Saudi Arabia. Politically, they don't want to be aligned with the Islamic State because the Islamic State would probably get rid of the Saudi family as the princes and, you know, there's the rulers of Saudi Arabia, and they would want to have something much more ruled by religious figures or by, you know, a different family, who knows. But practically, it's the same thing. You know, if you look at how the Saudis treat women and how they treat individual rights, how they treat individual freedoms, the difference between the Islamic State and Saudi Arabia is trivial. Remember that most of the terrorists who attacked the United States in 9/11 were Saudis. Most of the money Al-Qaeda ever got was Saudi Arabian money. Most of the money ISIS gets now is from Saudi Arabia. It goes through charities. It doesn't go through the royal family. It's not the government. But they support it. The Saudi family cut a deal with the Wahhabis 200 years ago. The Wahhabis get the spiritual. The Saudi family get the material. This is Attila and the Witch Doctor, if you're familiar with the terminology from Ayn Rand's essay. And they've ruled that land since then, and they're definitely hostile to Americans. And if we treated it that way, if we didn't treat them as friends, then they would shape up because the family of Saudi Arabia, the ruling family, wants to rule, and they care less about religion. If we force them to give up on the Wahhabis, I think they care more about their money than they do about their religion. That is the Saudi family, not the Wahhabis. So there's a question. Is Ayn Rand's idea spreading astronomically or just bit by bit? Are we 20 years away from making an impact or 200? Well, what is it? And he cites, there's so many Republicans like Ted Cruz who cite her and so on. Am I optimistic? So first of all, I think Ayn Rand's ideas are spreading. I don't think bit by bit is too small and astronomically is too big. They're spreading. They're spreading nicely. Not as fast as I'd like. Certainly not astronomically, but it's not bit by bit, which sounds like, you know, person here, person there. I think the numbers are substantial. But I also think we're a long way off from having real political influence. Now, I think Ayn Rand's already had profound influence on American culture and on politics. I think she had a profound impact on the Reagan administration and on a lot of good things that happened in the 70s and 80s with regard to deregulation and shrinking government in some areas. I think she's already had a positive impact on culture. There's a lot more sympathy to capitalism and to freedom than there used to be. And I think it's mainly Ayn Rand that's responsible for that. But I think we're still a long way off from impacting the politics. We're a long way off, certainly from laissez-faire capitalism. I think the fact that there are Ted Cruz and others who are citing Ayn Rand in public, I think is all good. But remember, Ted Cruz is also religious and socially conservative and holds a lot of very, very bad ideas. So he's not an objectivist. He's far from being an objectivist. But it's better that he's supportive of Ayn Rand than not. So do I think it's 20 years or 200 years? And I'm going to cop out of this one, and I'm going to say it's somewhere in between. It's not 20. I think that's too soon. It's probably somewhere between 50 and 100 years before we have some real, so much cultural impact that we will have significant political impact to really move the debate towards an objectivist laissez-faire world. From an objectivist perspective, would it be moral to vote for a presidential candidate that is extensively religious and a social conservative, but holds proper positions on important physical issues? I think it is. I mean, I think for any election, it has to be the choice between the lesser of two evils long term. And it's hard to make that decision. And, you have to evaluate on a case-by-case basis as the world changes. I think it depends who the opponent is. If the opponent is Obama or Elizabeth Warren, kind of a nihilistic form of the left, or Bill Clinton, which is bad, but nowhere near as bad as I think an Obama or Elizabeth Warren is. And then what are the other positions that this social conservative has, and how seriously do you think the social conservative will actually implement their ideas? I think the social conservatives have lost a lot of battles recently. I think the ability of a president in the near future to implement the social conservative agenda is small because they've lost the culture, at least in the short run on this. On the other hand, if you agree with Dr. Peacock's DIM, which I do, I think religion is a long-term threat. But, I think the long-term threat is exacerbated if the radical left succeeds. So the first agenda item right now is to defeat the radical left. I think that's the most important thing in the short run, and we need to continue to fight against the religious right at the same time. And yes, I would vote for Ted Cruz if he were running for president. Again, not as my ideal candidate, but as better than the alternative, short-term and long-term.
If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peacock.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most important novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And I might add that it wouldn't hurt you to read my latest book, The Dim Hypothesis.